the introduction for the book here first, a brief introduction. In case you didn't find this in your own study, Hosea means salvation or save. And the book is kind of internally dated within the first couple of verses, and it shows that Hosea was a prophet during the reigns of four different kings of Judah. So most commentaries say that he served as a prophet for about 50 years. So all through this time. And then one other king, a king of Israel, Jeroboam II, who reigned approximately from 793 to 753 B.C. So he was Jeroboam was the first king of the 10 nations, 11 nations, however you want to categorize them, in the northern kingdom. Jeroboam II was his, I think, was he grandson? But at any rate, I believe maybe great-grandson. So interestingly, who is this prophecy intended for? I'll just throw it out to the audience, and we won't pass the microphone around. Just if you say the answer, I'll repeat it. Who do you think this is intended for? Who is the book? Who did the prophet specifically go to? What is it? Who is the audience that he was intending? The northern kingdom? Anybody else? Primarily the northern kingdom. And I come to that conclusion based on the number of times key names are mentioned in the book, and also the fact that this is what all the commentaries say too. So take a look at this. I mean, I don't think of all the books that we study, I don't think there is anything more striking or more identifying than in this book, where Israel is mentioned 44 times. Now remember, in Bible prophecy, when Israel is mentioned, it's speaking of the descendants of Jacob. Because Jacob, who was a supplanter, and that's what his name means, his name was changed to Israel when he wrestled with an angel and wouldn't let go. And God told him, you're going to be named Israel from now on because you are an overcomer. This is meaning that he was a spiritual overcomer as well as being physically adept and, you know, just not wanting to let go. I think, this is an aside, that is a trait of the people of Israel, that they are overcomers, that they are people who stick to it and they surmount adversity. And I think through their history, they have shown that. When you understand who the descendants of Israel are, 44 times, more than any other name in the book. Jacob, whom we know, is also used in prophecy as a type of the descendants of him. Him who's Israel is mentioned 3 times. Now, what else did Jacob say when he was blessing Joseph's sons? He said, let my name be named on them, the name of Israel. But whose sons were it? It was Joseph's sons. So Joseph is mentioned 32 times. Now, anciently speaking, the leading tribe of all of the tribes was Ephraim. It was the largest tribe for many, many years, apparently. Ephraim is mentioned 32 times, and we specifically identify in many of our writings the people of Ephraim being the descendants who now live in the former colonies of the British Commonwealth, more specifically the Commonwealth of Nations that are mostly English-speaking peoples, to where those people settled from the United Kingdom to New Zealand to Australia to Canada, in some cases even South Africa. But in Canada as well. Did I mention Canada before? But anyway, that's where we identify those people. They are, in many cases, very much like us, and in some cases, quite a bit different from us. As Winston Churchill said, a people who are divided by one language. Right? Now, Samaria was the northern capital of Israel, and it is mentioned 6 times. Now, not to be left out, and there's a specific reason for this, Judah is mentioned 6 times in the book, and we'll see how that plays out. So just some interesting points here. I have outlined what I think are about 5 or 6 key passages in the book, and I'd like to quickly recite them in this particular outline of the book of Hosea for you. And if you are the kind that like to take notes, then maybe you want to take, and there are other key passages. These are the ones that perhaps leap out at the page, and we'll comment on them a little bit further when we get into it. Chapter 1 in verse 11, a very significant theme of this book. Bear in mind, before I read it, that Israel, the northern kingdom, went into captivity by the Assyrians beginning about 721, and it took about 3 years to fully remove them all the way to Assyria. So 721 to 718 BC. Judah, on the other hand, held on to God's law for a little bit longer, were a little bit more obedient. The southern kingdom, they retained some of the Sabbath, they retained the keeping of the holy days to some extent. They went into captivity about 605 to 585 BC to Babylon. Okay, so 2 separate captivities of 2 different peoples to different regions of the world, you know, kind of in the same general area to the northwest of where the land of Israel is today, but still separate captivities, separated by about 125 years or so, 120 years. So notice this, verse 11, then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head. When does that happen? After Christ's return, millennial, and they shall come up out of the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel. That's one significant passage. It shows, this book is great because it shows what's going to happen in the future after all of this mess is over with, and it's very encouraging. Chapter 5 and verse 5. The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore, Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also stumbles with them. So Ephraim is designated in kind of a separate way, although it was a part of the tribes of Israel. A lot of this book is directed towards Ephraim, or our British Commonwealth cousins, so to speak. But notice this, that never before did Judah stumble along with the 10 tribes to the north. They went into captivity separately. So what does that mean? That means this is not speaking of history right now. This is speaking of a future captivity of all of these people. And that is a significant theme of this book, that there is coming a time when the peoples of the United Kingdom, the peoples of the United States, and Judah, which many of them are scattered throughout all of Israel, but there's a concentration of them in the Middle East, in the modern nation of Israel, that they will stumble together, they will all fall together at the same time. That did not happen in history. Are we clear? Does that make sense to everyone? So a very significant verse. And verse 12 of the same chapter, therefore, I will be to Ephraim like a moth, and to the house of Judah like rottenness. When Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria and sent to King Jareb. Yet he cannot cure you nor heal you of your wound. And I will be like a lion to Ephraim and a young lion to the house of Judah. I will tear them and go away. I shall take them away and no one shall rescue. Well, in this sense, it has both a historical and modern-day application in the future. Hosea chapter 6 and verse 4. O Ephraim, what shall I do to you? O Judah, what shall I do to you? For your faithfulness is like a morning cloud. You see how they're kind of connected together at this time in a way that, even though they were separate, they are connected together in the time of the end, like they were not in terms of their historical fulfillment. Therefore, I have hewn them by the prophets, I have slain them by the words of my mouth, and your judgments are like light that goes forth. Hosea chapter 8, I know we won't be getting there today, but we can cover this as a background. Hosea chapter 8 and verse 14, really one of those kind of, if you mark your Bible, kind of a red, you know, highlighted area. Not that you should use highlighters on your Bible onion type paper, but if you had colored pencils, this might be a red letter one that you would cover, right? For Israel has forgotten his maker and has built temples. Judah has also multiplied fortified cities. Do you know that the nation of Israel has probably the most intricate and sophisticated defense system in the entire world? Now, we all probably know about the Iron Dome that is over the nation of Israel that has the ability to detect incoming missiles. And they probably have a lot more that we do not even know about in terms of their own defense. The nation of Israel today, though small, 8-9 million, something like that, used to be only 3 million, but whatever it is, one of the most technologically advanced in terms of their military capability. That is why they have been able to stay at relative peace, because after 1948 and 1956 and 1967 and 1973, all the surrounding nations, almost a billion people in total, realize this is a small nation, but it is very capable, and they do have nukes. So for a long time now, there's been a great deal of fear, you know, especially from Iran, Iraq, others who are mortal enemies, Syria, to attack Israel. But God says that time will come to an end, that he will send fire upon his cities and devour his palaces. So if you're not obedient to God and you're walking contrary to God, doesn't really matter what you do to protect yourself. God can find a way to send an opposing nation in, and he will. Daniel 11 shows us that that is going to happen. But we'll move on to the last of what I have picked out as key verses. And if you in your study think, hey, this is really significant too, then feel free to add it and bring it up to us next time. But Hosea chapter 12 and verse 2. The Lord also brings a charge against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. According to his deeds, he will recompense him. He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and in his strength he struggled with God. It outlines the historical perspective of Jacob as an individual here. Yes, he struggled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought favor from him. He found him in Bethel, and there he spoke to us. So again, that is a little bit of the historical context, which sums up what happened in the book of Genesis with his life. Now, let's take a look at some of the historical background, because at this particular time, in the early part of the 8th century B.C., it's similar to some of the other prophets we have recently studied, like Jonah and like Amos, that they were kind of at their height in terms of their prosperity, their military capability, nearly duplicating in land area what the combined kingdoms under Solomon and David were like. So it was a prosperous nation, extremely prosperous, like our nations today. A friend of mine once told me a few years ago, and this was pretty much true, and I think it's pretty much true, somebody that's been kind of a world traveler, the two blessed places to live on the earth are, number one, the United States, number two, Australia, and then the others like Canada, the United Kingdom, and New Zealand, not in any particular order, all fall right in behind there as being the most blessed places on the face of the earth, which I think is very, very interesting. So if you lived in these nations, you know what you've experienced. If you've been a world traveler, you know what it's like in other countries. Even if the only travel you've done is kind of set across the southern border, then you know that, well, it used to be, the distinction used to be much greater back, I'd say, in the 60s and the 70s. You go into Mexico, it's like you knew you were in the third world. I mean, it was like such a vast difference. Now with such migration coming across, I mean, in some cases, wow, this is really nutty, especially if you live in a southern state or the Rio Grande Valley of Texas or in this area here. The United States and the British peoples have kind of lifted all boats in the bay, right, because of what they've accomplished. And a lot of nations have risen because of the effect that is generated throughout the rest of the world. Certainly some of the book talks about that. Does the prophecy of Hosea apply today? Question mark. Well, let's take a look at Hosea chapter 2 and verse 16. And this phrase occurs several times in the book, Hosea 2 and verse 16. And it shall be in that day. I would like to encourage you, if you have access to a computer, that I've noted the work of BibleGateway.com to do searches if you're so inclined, if that's something that interests you. And if it doesn't, then that's okay too. It's something that does interest me. So I use BibleGateway, one word, .com, to do searches like this. And you'll find an astounding number of references in that day. And that used to be something that we used to speak about a lot. When it speaks about that day, it's talking about the time of God's intervention in the affairs of mankind, either right on the money at Christ's return or just before, or just, it's anticipatory in some cases. It's reflective in some cases. But if you have a computer and you don't use BibleGateway.com, I think you might be missing out. But here's what you use it for: scripture searches. Unless you have the extended version, which does have commentaries attached to it, which I pay $40 a year for because I figure it's worth it. But just in its free version, you can do a multitude of Bible searches. And if there's this word in a verse, and I don't know where it is, and if you've got the right word, you can find that verse. Now, sometimes a really common word, then you're going to get hundreds of things. So try it. And let me know how you like it if you haven't used it already, because I think it is a great tool for doing those kinds of searches. But that's what it has some limitations. It's limited to looking up verses and looking up words, or maybe even just popping up a scripture that comes into your mind, like Hebrews 4:17. You just type that into the search engine and boom, you got it. And then you can do a contextual search before and after that verse or the whole chapter. Anyway, I think it's great. To do that, it speeds up some things. So, Hosea chapter 3 and verse 5. Okay. I get it. I think I answered what I think you thought you said or what you did say, and I think I understood it. And okay. So, Hosea chapter 3 and verse 5. That was a reply from Mrs. Tennert. Afterward, the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. They shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. That's another interesting search to do. Latter days. Last days. Latter days. So this means at the time of Christ's return. Okay? So that's interesting. So the theme of the book is that the nations of Israel are commanded to repent and turn to God. We know that by and large, this is really kind of it's a failed cause, a lost cause, or something like that. It's not going to happen until the time of the Great Tribulation. But you never know what seed is planted now that might bring a harvest later on when times might be more difficult, right? It might be that some of the things that have been said in the present day actually find their fulfillment later on when times are tougher. And it really appears as though from the prophecies that times will get much tougher for us. And we may be seeing the beginning of those things. We got out a little ahead of ourselves years ago, maybe, in thinking that things would happen more quickly than they did. But don't ever ignore Bible prophecy, folks, because it has a way of surprising you later on if you do. But later on, after the tribulation, God is going to have mercy on all of the people that are left and who survive. But also the Gentiles, all the nations that aren't Israel, not a pejorative term, will also begin to have access to God, and they will enter into a marriage relationship with God. That is why I think that it was an astounding and shocking thing for God to require of his prophet, but it was intended to send the message that this is what you are doing to me, your God. And there are plenty of instances that we can look to and see that there is a direct marriage relationship and a covenant that God had with his people that is like a marriage, a matter of trust, a matter of a unique situation and relationship that God extended to these people and none other. But that is going to change when Christ returns, because Zechariah 14 shows that Israel, Egypt, and Assyria are going to be as one. They're all going to be the leading nations of the world tomorrow. So it is really an astounding thing that God is going to do. The world will have the opportunity to be God's people and call God my husband, Ishi, which is what Paul brought up. That is what that particular verse means. The theme of the book is the future salvation of the house of Israel. So let's begin in verse 1. We've already covered the first couple of verses anyway, and you know what this odd requirement and order to the prophet was in verse 2. Go take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry, for the land has committed a great harlotry by departing from the Lord. So Hosea's wife had also committed adultery, and her unfaithfulness pictured what the nation of Israel had done to God. So even as some of you mentioned, even the names of the children are unbelievable because they reflect what had happened historically and what this nation had done and what will happen in the future time and what we have to be aware of that our people today are being shown that they are. This is them as well. We have been, can I say, as a church group over the years, we've probably been really hard on people in calling out their sins and problems. And yes, today I was purposely trying to place the blame on those in leadership positions, many of them who know better, many of them who should know better, but many of them have taken advantage of the of power, influence, prestige that they have, and have done some very harmful things to people. So the names of the children take on a special significance, as we noted. So he went, verse 3, and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. And the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. Mr. Tannert mentioned this in the comments after the sermon. Jezreel means God will disperse. Now this warning eventually came to pass, and it's noted a few chapters later in chapter 10 and verse 14. We'll get to that. You can note it. But this was a historical event that happened beginning with the reign of Shalmaneser V from Assyria when they began to disperse the people of Israel. So this is what is meant by Jezreel, that God will disperse them. And she conceived again, bore a daughter. God said to him, verse 6, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no longer have mercy on the house of Israel, but will utterly take them away. That happened 721, 718 B.C. Lo-Ruhamah means not shown mercy. So God is showing the people through the names of this prophet's children that they are going to be punished and taken into captivity for their sin. Yet I will have mercy on the house of Judah and will save them by the Lord their God and will not save them by bow, by sword, or battle, by horses or horsemen. You find that in the reign of Hezekiah, king of Judah. That, what was it, the Assyrians, was it 185,000 were killed just mysteriously by an angel of God? And so it didn't happen for a while to Judah, but later on it did happen. And then Lo-Ami, the daughter, is not my people. So God, it got to the point to where they're sacrificing to Baals, they're offering their kids in sacrifices, and archaeology, by the way, has proven this. When they go to these tells in northern Israel, and a tell is a mound, you know, which they find, you know, they make this archaeological discovery. They have found places where they had altars where they sacrificed infants and firstborn. They found jars where they have the burned bodies of infants. Yet, what they did in that land was so horrible that God pronounced this judgment on them. But what happens in our society? We have had 70 million people sacrificed to the god of convenience because of the, not all just because of Roe versus Wade, but it certainly contributed to that. So I guess my prayer would be that the Supreme Court of this land would overturn that ruling. And that people would understand that abortion is murder. And that our Supreme Court would understand that. But if it doesn't, it just kind of helps us to understand where we have gone, right? But, again, a ruling body like this often rules in opposition to the will of the people. There are a lot of people that I'd say probably, even in surprisingly, in the millennial generation, studies have shown that many of our young people who have been weaned on abortion is good and it's a wonderful thing, freedom of choice and women's rights and blah, 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 blah. A lot of people reject that who are younger. So that's kind of a good thing. But at any rate, we have had our share of this kind of despicable action that takes place in our nation. So now, verse 10 shows you how dramatically things can change quickly. You know, boom, all the way we're, you know, catapulted forward thousands of years. In verse 10, yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered, and it shall come to pass in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people, that it shall be said to them, you are the sons of the living God. And that will happen during the thousand-year reign of Christ. Should not let verse 11 pass, then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together. That did not happen historically. They all went into captivity and basically, except for the Jews, were never heard from again. At least by many historical sources. You can trace those people. I mean, the Anglo-Saxon people came from somewhere. They came from the Middle East. They came from beyond the Black Sea, south of the Black Sea, and migrated up into northwestern Europe. I mean, those things are pretty simple to prove. But they'll point for themselves one head, Jesus Christ, and they shall come up out of the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel. You know, that disbursement is going to cease. Let's see, where shall we go here? Going into chapter 2. Verse 4, I will have mercy on her children, for they are the children of harlotry. For their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has behaved shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. Can you think of modern application of this? Sure you can. George Washington said in his farewell address after he left the presidency when they wanted to make him king, and he said no, because he believed in the republic style of government so much. He said, be careful of foreign entanglements. Oh, how much better we had been if we had listened to one of our most famous founding fathers, where we have a nation that was so rich and wealthy and became even, you know, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, so even wealthier than most of us have even lived in. I was reflecting the other day what a great memory it was that January 2021, I remember our first trip to El Paso. I usually buy my gas at Costco. I went up to the pump, and the price had gone down to $1.69 per gallon. The other day, I spent $4.69 per gallon. And you have too. We had finally reached the point where everybody in my college classes in junior college said we would never be again. We had reached for the first time in 75 years self-sufficiency in fuel. Do you know what a tremendous advantage it is for a nation to be able to supply all of its energy needs in an economical way? Do you realize the incredible economic advantage that that gives to you, and that we were a net exporter of oil just a few years ago? Just a few years ago, we were producing, and now, even now, it's hard for me not to get dramatic here. Okay, so I'm sorry. We have things like natural gas. We have more natural gas and liquefied natural gas than this nation could ever use for 400 or 500 years. Do you realize that? We have got more coal. And I'm not just parroting what someone else has said. We have clean coal that burns cleanly. We have clean coal. God gave us that in Wyoming and West Virginia and Pennsylvania. We could supply all the energy needs for this nation, electrically speaking, on coal alone for hundreds of years. But under the false pretense that coal is dirty and that we can't, you know, they have scrubbers on these units now to where the only thing you see is smoke. It's water vapor. We have got more of that available. So no, we don't want to mine that because that's dirty. You know, we got to go green. This green is an illusion. It's now, you know, hey, Buchanan, what are you talking about? You got solar panels in your house. Yeah, I do. They cost a lot to put up. And they're probably kind of inefficient, but if it wasn't beneficial, if it didn't lower my actual bill to where, you know, most of the time my bill is nothing, electrical bill. I'm just selling electricity back onto the grid. So in a sunny climate like this, it does really well. It's great. I can't store it because I don't have batteries, but I wish I did, but they're expensive too. But this whole idea is another hoax of energy, green energy. Now they want to spend trillions of dollars. Our nation is going downhill so fast. I guess maybe it doesn't matter, really, when you get down to it, because it's craziness, but it's a hoax. It's the green energy hoax. It is such a hoax. It is such a lie. It is such a diabolical thing that it's... I'll go toe-to-toe with anybody who wants to argue that case. And it is true that somebody, as he should have as a member, came to his minister and asked me for advice on buying a car. I'm not going to identify, and you should not identify who you are either, of course. But he had four choices, and one of them was a Prius, which I guess is a hybrid, right? It's an electric car, and it has a small gas motor. I did tell him, I'm going to be honest about this, I did tell the person, not him, I did tell the he, she, it, or them, I did tell them they would be disfellowshipped if they bought a Prius. So I'm coming clean on that. But, you know, we can't all afford a $80,000 electric car, right? Especially when gas costs $1.69 a gallon. Oh, wait a minute. That's it's not there anymore. See, I'm saying it with a smile on my face so I can say anything. Like, you're fired. Remember the old Progressive commercial? Say whatever you want with a smile on your face and people accept it. You're fired. I hate you. Not really. Okay, moving on. Let's move to verse 8 of chapter 2. She did not know that I gave her grain, new wine, and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. God gives us the increase. God gives us all these wonderful blessings, and then we turn around and worship other things. Now, we're not worshiping the god Baal today. Well, some people do, actually. Some people actually do. You know, all those people I talked about earlier in my sermon, they worship Baal, some of them in a quite active way. And I won't get into that. If you have questions, you can ask me later. I'll tell you how. But God says, therefore, I will return and take away my grain in its time, my new wine in its season, and I'll take back my wool, linen, given to cover her nakedness. So everything about our nation is going to be exposed. Not just the prosperity that we have, but it's going to be exposed as time goes on. It's just going to be exposed. We're going to be shown for what we have become, a nation that has departed from God. Verse 11, I'll also cause her mirth to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, all her appointed feasts. That's anciently. You know, they departed from the true feasts of God. In today's world, we're just going to lose out on the happy times, the good times. We've had plenty of them as a people. Let's move on to verse 16. Verse 16, Mr. Tanner did mention, this was the chapter you were mentioning, which was pretty long and thorough in its scope, right? Right? Verse 16, it shall be in that day that you will call me my husband and no longer call me my master, for I will take from her mouth the names of the Baals, and they shall be remembered by their name no more. In that day I'll make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, the creeping things of the ground, bow and sword of battle, I will shatter from the earth to make them lie down safely. Probably doesn't mean a whole lot to us now, but if you lived in the Ukraine, you would hope for that day, right? This is another crazy, crazy thing that has happened and that the leaders of our nations have actually kind of encouraged. It's so sad. It's really unbelievable, but let's see where we are here. Verse 21, it shall come to pass in that day that I will answer, says the Lord, I will answer the heavens, they shall answer the earth shall answer with grain, with new wine, with oil, they shall answer Jezreel. In this sense, it means God sows. Jezreel means God sows, which means that Israel will once again recognize God as the provider and husband. In verse 23, it says, then I will sow her for myself in the earth, and I will have mercy on her who had not obtained mercy. Then I will say to those who were not my people, you are my people, and they shall say, you are my God. Isaiah chapter 2 is a great study chapter. Micah 4 is a great study chapter, which shows the entire earth moves on to worshiping God. This passage next in verses 3 through 4 were mentioned. I believe Paul mentioned this particular part. I think you did, Paul. Then the Lord said to me, go again, love a woman who is loved by a lover and is committing adultery, just like the love of the Lord for the children of Israel who took other gods and loved the raisin cakes of their pageants. So I bought her for myself. This is the prophet. You did refer to this, right, Paul? Yes, you did. Okay. for 15 shekels of silver and 1.5 homers of barley. And I said to her, you shall stay with me many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man. So too will I be toward you. What does it mean? It means that Israel and God are going to once again have this agreement that the prophet was told to go buy her back. She had departed, and Israel has departed, but God is as in the same way that the prophet went to buy back and redeem his wife, God is going to redeem back his people. He's going to buy them back. And how did he do it? With the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, which they're unaware of now, many of them, but which they will understand when he is sitting on the Mount of Olives and ruling this earth, right? When his feet land. And they will recognize, as it says in Revelation, all eyes shall see him. They'll begin to recognize him for what he is. And they will be bought back, just like you have been bought back and redeemed by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. An important prophecy in verse 4, the children of Israel shall abide many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred pillar, without ephod or teraphim, which were God's revelation to the people. So there is coming a time, apparently, when, you know, has it begun now? When we don't have executive leadership in the nation, is it possible that it has an application? I don't know. But it's very obvious that others are pulling the strings of what is going on now. I mean, I don't want to mention names. I don't want to name names. I don't want anybody, you know, this is where people get, oh, you shouldn't be talking evil about the dignitaries or whatever. No, we're just calling a spade here. We're talking about life the way it really is. We're not denigrating anybody's office or any particular person. But you can't help notice the lack of leadership in our nation today. And I'll also say this. I'll add all the English-speaking peoples of the world. All of them, really. You go by one, I'm not going to do it. You go by one, and you think of all of them, from the Prime Minister of Australia to the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who is an avowed communist, by the way. Scott Morrison I'm not going to say anything bad about him, but Scott Morrison of Australia, who looked like he's going to be pretty conservative, hasn't turned out to be that way. Pierre Trudeau, again, an avowed communist. Look, we can't avoid these things. So, and then Boris Johnson in the UK, his wife is a witch. Now, I'm not saying she looks like a witch. I'm saying she is a part of a coven. Not many people know that, but it's true. I mean, she is a practicer of the dark arts. Okay, now, it doesn't make him necessarily a bad guy, but it shows you the state of their leadership. It's bad. It's worse than you thought. Much worse. All right. We're going to close with this. I'm going to mark my space at this. Maybe this will be a trifold type of study. Verse 4. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel, for the Lord brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. So nobody is exempt. There is no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying, killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break all restraint with bloodshed upon bloodshed. That is our nations today of Israel. I'm sorry. I need to make that a capital 4. That is chapter 4 and verses 1 and 2. Sorry. My apologies. Okay. We will stop that. We'll stop the timer.